AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Wheat futures kept the upside correction alive with solid gains in each of the three wheat markets. The soy complex doubled after posting early gains, and corn futures narrowly avoided a downside reversal. Live and feeder cattle futures were solidly lower, while hogs closed lower for the first time this week.
Live from the summit of Hump Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a conversation with Alan Brugler from Brugler Marketing. Directly following the news, Todd Bubba Horwitz from BubbaTrading.com. I'm a handsome newsman, Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chap Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. Welcome to AgriTalk. I got to do the same thing that we did this morning.
Okay.
And jump right into the news. This is more news. This is from the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, APHIS, which is obviously a division of the USDA. And it is regarding the HPAI H5N1 virus that they have found in dairy cattle. There is an order out there now, and here, I'll just read from it. In order to continue to monitor and understand the extent of the virus and reduce the risk of further disseminating HPAI H5N1 virus, resulting in greater threats to poultry and livestock, this federal order requires the following measures effective Monday, April 29, 2024. So effective on Monday. Mandatory testing for interstate movement of dairy cattle. Okay. Prior to interstate movement, dairy cattle are required to receive a negative test for influenza A virus. There's some other details to it, but we're not going to go through it here. You can find them if you need them. Owners of herds in which dairy cattle test positive for interstate movement will be required to provide the data so that that animal can be traced going forward. Okay. Dairy cattle moving interstate must adhere to conditions specified by APHIS. And as will be described in forthcoming guidance, in other words, APHIS is still trying to get out in front of it. So there's more guidance coming. These steps will be immediately required for lactating dairy cattle, while these requirements for other classes of dairy cattle will be based on scientific factors concerning the virus and the evolving risk profile. There will also be mandatory reporting of the disease. Laboratories and state veterinarians must report positive influenza A detection in livestock to USDA APHIS. So mandatory reporting and mandatory testing for interstate movement.
Okay.
Dude, they are struggling to get in front of this.
Yeah. I don't know. It's easy for me. I don't have a whole lot of skin in this game. It seems like
too.
A sensible approach. It seems like a sensible approach. Let's increase our monitoring here.
Well, exactly. And especially since they're still trying to figure out exactly how it spreads. Okay.
It's not going to make life any easier if you got cattle to move.
Right.
I'll grant that.
Right. And we know that it has gone bird to bovine. It has gone bovine to bovine, and if it can go bovine back to bird with this adjustment or this variation of a virus, it's got the potential to create some real issues down the line. So,
question about the nomenclature: did they use BF in that press release at all?
Absolutely not.
Not even once.
BF is not what we're talking about. Is the change in name that was proposed by the bovine practitioners, veterinary practitioners. The practitioners were asked to rename the virus. Okay? They renamed it, and then APHIS rejected it.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I feel like, and no, it's not that I feel like, APHIS is still trying to get in front of this, the spread of this disease through the dairy herds. And,
sure.
And the information that we had this morning, 38% of 150 milk samples purchased off the shelf in grocery stores tested positive for the presence, mm-hmm. for the presence of the virus, but not the virus. The milk supply is safe. Period. End of story.
Right.
All right. Let's get to as much of the news as we can here.
Quickly here, hard red winter wheat futures closed higher for a fifth consecutive session. Each of those sessions featured a low range open and a high range close. July soft red winter wheat futures spiked resistance at the Feb 7 high and posted the highest close since February 2nd. Dry conditions in the U.S. HRW belt and in Russia's southern grain production areas are encouraging short covering in wheat futures. The ongoing disruption of Ukrainian wheat supplies to the world is also limiting selling. July HRW wheat futures 15 and three quarters higher, 630. July SRW wheat up 10 and a quarter, 613. July spring wheat closed at 685 and one half. That's up 13 and one quarter cents.
This has really turned into something. We'll talk to Alan about just how what this rally in wheat might mean going forward.
Ethanol production week ended April 19, averaged 954,000 barrels per day, down 29,000 from the previous week, and 1.3% below a year ago. Ethanol stocks off 347,000 barrels in the week to a still adequate 25.733 million barrels. Spillover support from wheat helped to limit selling in corn futures. May corn 5 1/4 cents lower, 437 and three quarters. July corn down 4 cents to 448 and a half. December corn futures closed at 472 and three quarters. That's down 2 cents on the day. Let's not keep Bubba waiting.
All right, let's go ahead and jump on over there to him. Todd Horowitz, BubbaTrading.com. How you doing, buddy?
What's up, fellas? How are you?
We're doing real good, real good. What do you make of these markets in here, man?
Well, I do think, as I said, I think the grain markets have bottomed. I don't know how fast they're going to go up. I think wheat's probably a touch overextended in the near term. But, again, we'd like to see just a little bit of a pullback and then another rally. But I do think that the bottoms are in, and I think that unless there's some funny business going on, and you know my concern, I've talked about it before, but if it's a straight-up market, I think that the lows are in, prices will start to rise. Because if you look at, as I said, the worldwide commodities are all running, and the only thing.
Looks like we might have. Was he about to say something that he shouldn't have? Is that what's going on here?
That might be it. That might be it. Is the government listening to our station again here?
I'll guarantee it. That's the way it goes.
Wheat off and running,
maybe getting a little bit out in front of itself. There's a real concern for that, especially when we sit here and it looks like, you get into that fourth day with double-digit gains in the HRW contracts, and you have to kind of wonder just how much is left in this market. And how much longer it might happen. So it's something that we need to pay attention to and try to figure out as we move on. But Bubba's been wanting to be on the buy side of the grain markets for quite some time here.
Well, he has. And we got some pressure on the protein markets here too. Live and feeder cattle down quite a bit. Lean hogs off day there too.
All right. Okay, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. And thanks to Bubba. Wish we could have kept you on there, but ran into a bit of a technical difficulty there. We'll get him back on as soon as we can. All right, coming up next, we're going to get into a conversation with Alan Brugler, Brugler Ag Marketing, right here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us. It's Wednesday afternoon. Wednesday afternoon already. Good.
We're here at the summit of Hump Day. Yes, right now.
it's something to be at the summit, isn't it?
It really is. The visitor center up here, you can't beat the views.
best hot dog on the summit right there at the visitor center.
I'm a junior hump day ranger myself.
Are you?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Waiting to get my pins.
You know,
in
case we need somebody to help get us into the hump day memorial.
Well, I can get you into hump day. I just am not qualified to lead you back out.
Gotcha.
I can get you in there. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. I'm Chip. That's Davis. Let's get into this conversation with Alan Brugler, Brugler Marketing Service. Alan, it's great to talk with you again. How are you?
Well, we're doing pretty well, Chip. How about yourself?
Doing all right. Doing all right. The spring allergies got me already, man. Can you believe it?
Well, if I sound a little gravelly, it's that Claritin talking.
Yep. That's it. Everybody's got their favorite, and got to use it this time of the year. No doubt. We had ethanol production report again today. I thought last week stunk, and it did. This week's weekly ethanol report stunk even worse. Is this a trend that we're getting into?
Well, you wouldn't think so, given the the EPA ruling that you can use E15 pretty much everywhere this summer. You'd think you'd be getting some more demand here building up, but I think we do have some issues with miles driven and fleet efficiency, and we're staring at pretty large stocks. So, it's probably temporary, and then we'll start to see another pickup.
Okay, so the availability of E15 this summer, how much of a difference maker is that?
Well, we'd like to think it's a lot. Okay, you're using E10 everywhere, you use E15 everywhere. That's a 50% increase, right? But it's very limited for a couple reasons. Number one, the number of E15 pumps is still a small fraction of the total number of gasoline pumps in the United States. And the requirement to not use it in the summer is not across the whole country. It's only certain areas with high pollution and high vapor issues. Our estimate is that by opening that up to full sales pretty much everywhere, it's about 50 to 75 million bushels of additional corn use that we wouldn't have had if the summer restrictions had been in place. So it's positive, but it's not a huge number.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'll take the 50 to 75 million in use, that's for sure. Now, we don't have to go through this again, through the whole, is there going to be E15 available in the summer? We do not have to go through it again for next year in the 8 Midwest states, but that does not clear the path for nationwide availability of E15, we're starting to create the regional markets here, Alan. Even the petroleum interests would rather have E15 available year round across the entire nation than cutting the market up into chunks, wouldn't they?
Yeah, it really gets messy, given your distribution pipelines, what product is in the pipeline and or are you just wasting octane somewhere? Okay. Yeah. Because pretty much everybody went to an 84 octane base gas because they expected to put E10 or 10% ethanol in it. If you're selling E15, you may be not have the optimal blend there. And if you've got a segment, okay, this pipeline is, we're stuffing it full of stuff that product that would like E15 blended with it, but you've got markets that can't sell E15. It's messy. You end up with hauling stuff by tanker to places you didn't want to, and or long distances by tankers. It would be much saner, I think, if we had E15 universally.
Right.
Of course, the issue is the vapor pressure, and you know, you do have some potential to add a little smog in some localities. But the flip side is, ethanol is a lot cleaner fuel to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Can you envision a time where E15 is the standard, kind of the default gasoline at the pump?
I can see that, but again, it's converting the pumps that's the issue. I hear is a lot of the pumps just can't, the older pumps, and there's what, I don't want to say 45,000, but that may be too low, pumps that would have to be switched out. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's locations. But the point is, it's a multi-year infrastructure issue, and the gasoline retailer has very little incentive to do it because, hey, he's got EVs coming down the road on him and being pushed on him everywhere he looks.
Yeah.
Do I want to make an investment in a new set of pumps that's going to take me 5 years to pay off if I don't know what kind of volume I'm selling in 5 years?
Yep. Yeah. Do you believe the EV push? Do you think it's going to happen?
Well, it's being pushed. I think it's going to go a lot slower than what the Greens would prefer. And it's really just practicality. Okay. Range anxiety is not anxiety. It's a real concern that if I'm driving to Holdridge, Nebraska and back, which is 3 hours and 15 minutes each way, I don't want to have to sit there for a half hour charging my battery.
Right.
And I don't want to, in the wintertime, I won't even get there and back. Okay. Right. That's a real concern. I, my opinion is that the electronic vehicles will be widely adopted on the East Coast and West Coast, where you've got high population densities, you've got shorter distances to drive for the typical person. And if they can charge it at home, which is an issue if you're an apartment dweller in one of those big cities, getting a charging place is a problem. But I think that's those are the areas that have the biggest pollution problems, throw in Denver and a few places like that too. But it makes some sense to have a higher EV mix in those areas. But for those of us out here in the flyover states where we've got to drive long distances, I think hybrids are the way to go.
Yep. Okay. Interesting. What do you make of this disease in the Argentine corn crop? It's kind of a late season disease this year that is hanging on, the corn stunt.
Yeah. My understanding is it's insects are spreading it. It's taken the production estimates from 55 or 56 million tons down to 49 to 50. Maybe 51, if they're really not sure what the final impact is on yield in some of these areas, but it's definitely taking the top end of what was going to be an excellent corn crop. You still have a lot bigger corn production this year in Argentina than you had last year with the drought. So we do have to be aware that it's not as bearish of a crop size as it was going to be.
Right.
But there's still a lot of corn there. And with the Milei government, devaluing the peso and wanting the stuff to be exported, I think, we've got to be prepared that Argentine corn is going to be competitive when it's out of the field and available.
Yeah. How small does that crop have to get before it would have more of a positive impact on the U.S. market? And is it even possible? Can it happen this year?
It's going to have to be, I think, in combination with some other variable. Okay. Whether that's the Brazilian crop is another 5 million tons smaller than we think, or the U.S. crop is threatened in some way. I don't think your late planting is the story right now, although 2-3 weeks from now, you could change that if it just rains and keeps raining. But I think it's going to have to be a combination, but to really be the market factor.
Yeah. Yeah. Rains and keeps raining. We're supposed to get maybe as much as 3 inches of rain between Thursday night and Sunday afternoon, Alan. That's going to put the brakes on things for a bit up here in Northeast Iowa.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely going to slow things down. Of course, Iowa's the place that's been saying, hey, we need 2 or 3 inches of rain.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, sounds like your prayers are being answered.
Exactly, dude.
Okay, be careful what you wish for. But yeah, nice rain. Just after you drop the 3, will you stop for about 10 days so I can get some planting done?
That's right. That's right.
I can tell you out here in Nebraska, we're seeing everybody running, 18-hour days here trying to get as much in before the rain hits as they can.
Yeah.
Conditions are really good right now to get stuff in the ground, and they're pushing hard.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, they're pushing, but they're not. I wouldn't say that they're pushing hard in Northeast Iowa. There's some concern over the soil temperatures and just what those rains might mean. We are in the middle of a conversation with Alan Brugler, Brugler Marketing Services. We'll get right back to it next on AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Let's go to the markets page at ProFarmer.com and check today's closes. For July, HRW wheat futures were 15 and 3/4 cents higher at 6:30. July SRW wheat up 10 and 1/4 cents to 6:13. May corn futures 5 and 1/4 cents lower at 4:37 and 3/4. December corn futures closed at 4:72 and 3/4. That's down 2 cents on the day. May soybean futures a penny and a half lower at 11.66. November beans closed at 11.74 and a half. That's up 1/2 cent. July cotton today 71 points lower, 81.01. On your livestocks, June fat cattle $1.90 lower, 175.29. May feeder futures $1.95 lower, 244.10. And on the snout side, June lean hogs 50 cents lower, 107.45. Get more market news every market day. Just visit tryprofarmer.com. Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip. Glad you're with us. We are in the middle of a conversation with Alan Brugler, Brugler Marketing Service. Alan, I should ask this question as soon as we were talking about Argentina and some of the issues that they're having with that corn crop and the stunt disease late in the season. Can it turn into more demand for U.S. corn?
I think, price is the key variable there. U.S. Sure. is more competitive than Brazil right now. That'll be the case until mid-June, probably, when the winter corn crop in Brazil starts to come out of the field in volume starting in July, Brazil will really ramp up. At that point, we're starting to lose market share anyway. Yeah. Right now we have a great window of opportunity to export U.S. corn because we are cheaper than Brazil, and Brazil's out of the the corn that they had available to export. They're shipping less than 2 million tons a month. Argentina will step in May with more volume, and they could capture some of that share that Brazil's not going to have. We have been looking for the U.S. to have a really strong export sales program between now and mid-June. You know, we ought to be starting to see 1.5 to 2 million ton export sales weeks. If Argentina has a, you know, most of the expected crop, they're going to nibble on some of our markets.
Okay. Well, that'd be a positive. You can't say that it's a turn for the corn market. I mean, demand has not been terrible in the export market for corn, has it?
No, we're running considerably. I think on the week-to-week or the cumulative, we were running about 35% ahead of year ago. Yeah. Year ago was bad. Okay, yeah. We're not up to 2 year ago levels, but no, demand's been pretty good. Price ration or low prices cure low prices. The price drop has helped us quite a bit on the export market. Although I have to say, a lot of that has been Mexico. Okay, it's been. Yep. They've been a huge buyer this year, GMO or non-GMO notwithstanding. They've been huge buyers. They've got the freight. Ocean freight has got problems still with the Panama Canal. And so
that's getting better, though, isn't it?
It's getting better. You're starting to see ships go through there. If you look at these tracking maps, show me all corn vessels. You're starting to see some green arrows coming through the Panama Canal. Yep. But for several months there, the best game in town was put it on a train and send it to Mexico, and they were buying. Now I think we're in a position, obviously, our main markets are Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, China. You want grain moving that way. PNW is the best answer if you got corn volume or soybean volume to get there. Panama Canal was second. So Mexico's bailed this out. I think for the next couple of months, the market's going to be more of those countries that I just mentioned. You don't want to be having to compete with Argentina or Brazil going around the southern tip of Africa because they've got a shorter hauling distance.
Right. Okay. What do you make of the wheat market trying to be a leader in this price recovery in the grains?
Been burned so many times trying to pick a bottom there, I'm scared.
Yeah.
I this was somewhat anticipated. Simply because if you look at USDA's ending stocks numbers for the world, and you take China out because they don't export wheat, they're one of the major stockholders. If you look at world ending stocks ex China, things are the tightest since before 2007, which was the year we had the double digit wheat prices. The point I've tried to make the producers all winter is that is a end of year forecast. That the ending stocks is end of year, which is May 31st. So the issue has been the stocks have been getting tighter, but they weren't tight enough for a residual supplier like the U.S. to get a lot of the market share. Now I think you're starting to see the U.S. shipments pick up as they should in that environment. And then, more importantly, the Russians attacked some of the port infrastructure, Pivdenye in particular, one of the three main export ports for the Ukrainians, mm-hmm. and damaged some infrastructure there. So you're seeing their volume drop off there. I think that's the European supplies are also getting a little tighter here. So. The big question mark is can Russia come up with some more wheat, because they are still lowballing everybody. Okay. They're farmers taking it on the chin for Mr. Putin, accepting lower prices so he can pay for his war. Yeah. And, if the Russians really are starting to run a little low, or they get worried about their new crop, and there are some weather concerns there, the wheat here could rally some more. We've certainly got a lot of shorts that need to cover.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's what are you watching for an indicator on that Russian crop? Is there a consulting firm? Is it a just watch rainfall patterns? What are you watching?
Somewhat rainfall. I like the NDVI quite a bit. The vegetative greenness, because that kind of says, is the crop behind or ahead, and is it stressed? It's very hard to use NDVI. Even crop mapped is even better, because that's you're not looking at trees and weeds.
Right.
It's hard to relate that to an actual yield. You need the USDA does a nice job of blending, their objective yield plots on the ground with their NDVI stuff. Their MODIS is the term they use.
Right.
But you don't have quite that level of ground truth in the Russian situation. But I think the NDVI is pretty good.
Okay.
You can look for hints from, soil moisture or record high temps or those types of things. But when we're talking wheat, you have to remember wheat's a little more tolerant of heat and dryness both than some other crops.
Absolutely.
The old saying I grew up with was you spit on it and it'll grow.
And there's a fair amount of truth to it when it comes to wheat, no doubt. Hey, the domestic soybean use, the crush, is it growing at a pace that you're comfortable with?
Yeah, I think so. We know we got two new plants on last fall, so they're kicking in 8 to 9 million bushels of crush a month between them. And so you would expect to see record crush every month this year, all right? Because you got two more plants, and we had a couple other expansions at the tail end of last year too. The 1 month that we haven't had record crush was when somebody hit a gas line outside a Bungie plant, and they had to shut down for a few days, which was the same time we had the 20 and 30 below temperatures in January. We had some unusual conditions that caused that. So I think you're going to see crush run at record levels all year. We're not going to run out of beans based on the ending stocks numbers. Crush margins have gotten a lot worse. When all the plant expansions were announced or new construction was announced back in 2022, we were looking at some what we call our new era soy crush model. Mm-hmm. That got up to almost $4 a bushel briefly, which is a license to print money. Now it's only $1.40 to $1.50. That's still in profitable territory for the crusher, but it's nowhere near as attractive. I think the bigger question is how fast the other plants that were announced back in 2022 get online. If you remember, there were 13 or 14 of them total, and only two of them are actually in production so far. We do have several more that are supposed to be online before the end of this year. And so I think you'll continue to see that crush go up.
Gotcha. Okay. So what does all of this mean when you take in everything that we just talked about? What does it do to your risk management strategy for corn, soybeans, wheat into the middle of summer?
Well, I think number one question is, do we actually have a bottom? Okay. Was that February low the low? I like the action this last week or so because we went partway back to check the low and couldn't get there, and then we tried to bounce. The reason I say that is we know that historically the average summer rally in corn is about going back to 1980, I believe, is about 70 cents a bushel from that spring low to summer high. And typically it takes more than 30 days to do it. Usually there's 13 or 14 new highs during that move. So the point is, if you've got the spring low in place, we got a lot more to go, and bean numbers are similar. The cautionary note is the average going across that time period, the average low actually occurs around May 15th for beans and around May 30th for corn, if you combine all those years together. So, a rally in late April doesn't necessarily tell you you've seen the spring low yet.
Okay.
But it's it's a scale rally that we get that's got my attention. Okay.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. I can't believe this. The time got away from me here, Alan. This is unbelievably unfair of me to ask you on the air, but can you stick around through this break? I want to talk to you about cattle and HPAI and how the market might react to all that. Have you got a couple of minutes for me?
For you, I'll make it happen, Chip.
Hey, I appreciate that, Alan. Alan Brugler coming back for segment 4 here on AgriTalk. Thanks, buddy.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you're with us. Boy, I tell you what, I should have done a better job of managing my time in this conversation with Alan. I had a lot that I wanted to talk to him about and did not get to something that I think is really important. So Alan Brugler, Brugler Marketing Service, is back with us here for a few minutes here in this final segment. Alan, the spread of H5N1, the bird flu virus, through the dairy cattle, and now APHIS has come out and said, as of Monday, shutting down the interstate movement of the cattle without jumping through some hoops on it first. What do you make of all of this?
Well, you know, obviously it was significant that it jumped to the cattle in the first place, and that, at least in one case, a human got it down in Texas. But yeah, what's causing the alarm now is that they thought that pasteurization was getting rid of the virus. And now that they found some virus fragments in some pasteurized milk. Mm-hmm. So they really want to put a cold hard stop to this, to the spread here. Yeah. So as you mentioned, they're requiring that you test any cattle that are moving in interstate commerce, to see if they have the virus.
Right.
Most of the outbreak has been in the herd in Ohio, the herd in various states that have been getting cattle out of Texas, and that's where the virus spread. So what to do, it doesn't do a whole lot, shouldn't do a whole lot to milk supply or to milk consumption other than, media hype maybe. Has even less impact, I think, on beef prices.
Right.
But what we're seeing is, of course, the funds are not nearly as committed to the long side as they were last year on the cattle side. Okay. All right, last year it was very clear cut story. You had the cattle cycle showing shrinking herd. We had fewer feeders, and therefore less meat production, and prices ought to go higher. Now we're kind of in a situation where we still don't have the cattle, but the funds got beat up pretty badly in the fourth quarter of last year on that sell-off. They came back in this year trying to play an extension of the game. And then you get something like this HPAI incident kind of floating around out there, and they're concerned about, are there other viruses that could spread to cattle or hogs? And there certainly are. That interfere with commerce. We also have a little concern about consumer buying right now because retail prices for meats are up,
right,
and they're feeling a little squeezed by inflation.
Right. what do you do in this kind of an environment if you've got a yard full of cattle? You got to put some downside protection in place, don't you?
I think so. Yeah. Particularly after this last rally, we got up against some overhead resistance. It was very easy to identify in the chart 2 or 3 days ago. I think that was and certainly that's what our chief livestock analyst Austin Schroeder told our clients. It's time to buy some puts. Okay. And get a price floor under this thing. Let's protect the rally we've already got. We'll give it a little more time before we want to get either add you know full okay. coverage or you know full delta coverage. To get some short futures in there too. But you don't want to give up the rally that you've had here right. in the last month or two. So
right.
get a floor under it and hope for the best.
Excellent. Excellent. Alan, you've been very generous with your time, sir. Thank you so much. Appreciate you, man.
My pleasure.
All right. That is Alan Brugler, Brugler Marketing Service. Yeah, we had to get some additional perspective on what this is, the new transport rules on the bovines, and it's mm-hmm. lactating dairy cows in particular is what they're talking about here, Davis. I don't think it's been confirmed in a beef cow yet.
I haven't seen anything like that.
No, I haven't either. I'm not saying that it's not into some beef cows. I'm just saying that it hasn't been confirmed. And some of the details on this story is that as they are trickling in from different corners of the story are concerning, that maybe there's a couple of more cases of human HPAI cases out there that we need to be aware of. Maybe. And the thing is, the conversation that Tyne Morgan had with Dr. Andrew Bowman from Ohio State University, who is researching the virus, as Alan Brugler just mentioned, they've found some traces of the virus, some RNA of the virus in pasteurized milk. And it's not the virus. It's just evidence that the virus was there at some point is, I think, the right way to say it. And because of that, it was 38%, Davis, of the 150 samples. It was 38% of the samples that they pulled off the shelf in mm-hmm. six states had traces of the virus. That's certainly more widespread than what APHIS has indicated at this point.
I believe I'd like to see results for all 50 states at this point now. I don't need to open that can of worms, but bro, if it's that pervasive and unseen,
yeah.
Feels like maybe we should dig in a little deeper.
Feels like we should get it figured out. I don't think there's any question about it. Well, speaking of Dr. Andrew Bowman, Tyne and I have a conversation planned with him for later this afternoon. Tyne Morgan and I, we will have that conversation for you tomorrow morning on AgriTalk. And, of course, Tyne will have full coverage for you on U.S. Farm Report this weekend. It's one of those issues, like I said, it feels like APHIS is trying to get out in front of it and having a tough time doing it. National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook, April 30th through May 4th. Above normal temperatures across the entire Corn Belt. Highest odds of above normal temperatures, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, and Iowa. Above normal precipitation expected, Wisconsin, Iowa, northern Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Minnesota. Below normal precipitation in April 30th through May 4th in Indiana, southern Illinois, back over to Ohio and points to the southeast there. We are also going to have a conversation with Scott Brown tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon, Jim Emter from Van On.